Legend Network podcast is never late, nor are they early. They arrive precisely when they're meant to. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast from explosionnetwork.com. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast. My name's Dylan White. Joining me for our final movie discussion prior to the series kicking off next week, Ashley Hobbit.
Hey Dylan, excited to be here, and I have to ask, have you learned nothing of the stubbornness of elves, of dwarfs?
Leaving it in! Can't get the line right. Also here, Kira Marchant.
Oh, hello there, fellow members of the Fellowship.
Who the fuck are you? Depressed elf. This week we are discussing The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and you may have missed that because Ash got the quote wrong, so you could have thought he was talking about a different movie. That's fair.
Elves are also stubborn.
Yeah, okay. Synopsis of which is Gandalf and Aragorn lead the world of men against Sauron's army to draw his gaze from Frodo and Sam as they approach Mount Doom with the One Ring. Of course, once again directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Miles, Philippa Boyens, and Peter Jackson, based on the novel by J.R.R. Tolkien. Ash.
Yes.
Long movie.
It is a long movie.
Normally, it's a long movie. Watched the extended cut.
On average, it's a long movie. This is a very long movie.
How do you feel about that?
I don't like to complain about the length of films because, I don't think it's an actual real problem. This was long.
How'd you go about that?
Had to take a couple of breaks, pause for, go to the bathroom, refuel.
Yeah.
Had a good time. It was engaging, very enjoyable. It surprisingly didn't have any extra endings. It had the same amount of endings as in the film. It's the conclusion of this story that we're like several years in the making, and like it hit the landing. It like nailed it, and it was super fulfilling when they put that ring in that volcano, and it all erupts. Very, very satisfying conclusion. So I'm very happy.
Karen.
It's real nice to get to a third movie that, doesn't feel like it needs to rush through anything to finish itself off. Like, it feels like there's nothing. It gets to, the end of the second movie in so many other trilogies or so many series, get to their last episode, and they go, oh, holy fuck, we've got to tie up so many fucking loose ends, we've got to do it really quickly, and we've got to... And Lord of the Rings doesn't do that. Lord of the Rings takes its time. It allows its story to breathe and progress naturally. I really enjoyed Return of the King. I don't love Return of the King to the same point, Two Towers, because I find the start of Return of the King kind of drags a little tiny bit. And I'm not a massive... there's something about jumping to Frodo and Sam. That is, sometimes it just feels a bit janky when it pulls you away from this massive hype battle that is currently happening. I really love Aragorn's story throughout this. Gandalf going back to his sassy ways of being pissed with Pippin, but Pippin actually giving him a decent reason to be pissed for once. And then combined with even though I complained about it, I think Frodo's story towards the end of this movie, I absolutely love. I love how melancholy the end of this movie is, really, for me. Because even though, the heroes won, the age of men truly begins, Frodo and the hobbits are able to return to the Shire, and it still has to go through that post-war kind of feeling for Frodo of Frodo... never really came back to the Shire. He could never adjust. He could never return, like so many people in real life have been through. And all of a sudden, he has to leave and he has to pass on. And you really notice, and you really know that throughout all of this, looking back at it, Frodo's journey was for the betterment of Sam. Sam was the one who deserves the happy ever after. And he gets his happy ever after. Sam is loyal. Yeah. Sam is steadfast. He stands by Frodo the entire time. Yeah, he gets pushed away, but he comes back. And I think Return of the King is...
Sam's the MVP of the movie, so...
100%.
Yep.
Yeah, Sam does so much, and he is...
Saves him multiple times this film.
And the thing is, Sam is the most average and stock standard character out of every... Like, he's not special. He doesn't have a magic gift. He's a gardener that got pulled along to protect after he was accidentally eavesdropping in a window. It's, you know, it's a marvel to look at. And, you know, I think it always gets me choked up at the scene of the four hobbits with everybody at the top of Gondor bowing down to them and kneeling before them.
I will say, some of the CG.
Yeah, CG doesn't look great sometimes.
Does not look great.
Does not look great, especially when they
especially that, where they definitely do not look like they're in the same place.
Movie is a year away from being 20 years old, I think.
I know, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, you would expect a little bit more of a reaction than just standing
there. I guess Return of the King has the most shots of the hobbits side by side with fully scaled people.
Yeah.
In shots that they can't actually do practical effects for to hide it. Going from, you know, all the way at the start to the scene with Merry and Pippin dancing on tables in the feast at Rohan, all the way through to that end part. It is very much a case of, very much a case of them not being able to use the same methods they'd used previously to show their scale. Extended cut, I overall love the extended cut. I absolutely hate one scene in the extended cut with a passion. And that is the confrontation between Gandalf and the Witch King, to suggest that Peter Jackson has already been out and said previously that they got a bit ahead of themselves with this scene to try and make the Witch King seem like more of a threat. Because based on everything of lore to do with Gandalf being Gandalf the White, he has no way that the Witch King could have overpowered him in such a way. Which is, you know, it's a nerdy and lore-based bugbear for me to pick at. But for me personally, it's just very frustrating when I watch it. But no, I love this movie. I love its ending. It's multiple endings. I absolutely adore it. And I adore the way it encapsulates the trilogy. And also... You know, how was The Hobbit, The Battle of Five Armies, the way it was, where it had this as a reference point, which the same people fucking made? It's not even like it's a different director or anything. Peter, what the fuck are you doing? You made this great Battle of Gondor, and now... Oh, don't... carry on.
How do you stop it, though?
How do you stop what?
How do you top it?
Top it? You don't top it, but you don't try and... I don't know.
You had attempt to top it.
I think the thing that this combat, the battle gets right is the scale of the battle. Whereas if you look at the scale of the Battle of Five Armies, the name Battle of Five Armies makes it sound like it should be a massive battle. It shouldn't be a massive battle. It should be a fairly well-contained battle. And it just went a bit overboard in the movie.
This is my
favorite.
Wasn't
this technically also the Battle of Five Armies?
No, it's four.
Well, they cut off the other army.
No, it's technically five because you would class the mercenaries as an extra army, even though they're kind of one of the same.
They got taken out real quick because they're shit.
This is my favorite Lord of the Rings movie. I haven't watched this, obviously, the extended cut before, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. I think I like everything about this movie already, but I feel like having done this extended cut week by week watch, that the melancholy type stuff that Kieran was talking about before, and that sort of the way the ending and everything plays off, and like how emotional that is for all the characters, and how nice it is to see all these things wrapped up and the characters head certain ways and whatever else. I feel like doing this extended cut watch so close before, like, even heightened that compared to last times I've watched these movies where I've done them like way more spread out and stuff like that. So that really, really built upon that. The other thing I was thinking when I was watching this and I wrote down on my notes was that, thank God, I'm glad that for these podcasts we've been doing, I chose to just make them general discussions and not major character arc, story arc breakdowns. Because, oh my God, we would be here for hours. Like, I was like, since we'll probably just be talking about the TV show for like half hour, 45 minutes, let's try and just make these just general movie discussions and not like... of,
minute by minute breakdown,
you know how like some of the stuff like Star Wars stuff where I've done or other stuff where it's like more like actual story beat, character beat breakdowns. Like I was like, fucking hell, like this would be here forever. There's like so much to
be here for 4 hours
break down. Yeah. Yeah. But if you're doing it, it would be like going over every character, every story, every beat, every minutia. It's like, oh, there's so much fucking happening. And I mean, that's why people have podcasts dedicated on probably to actually breaking these things down, because there is
like
probably so
I imagine there's like a Lord of the Rings minute by minute podcast.
I'm sure.
Surely someone's done that. Sure, you can have that one for free, guys.
Yeah. Putting it out there.
We love doing podcasts, but we're not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. But no. I did take, I took a break as well, which I think is fine. Like in general, I don't love when people.
I don't know if I could have watched this in a cinema.
No, I think they would have had a intermission though. But that's the thing. I get annoyed when people like.
Question: where was the disc break? We didn't talk about it last episode.
Oh, well,
disc break is prior to the Aragorn and the. Army of the Undead attacking the ships and shooting Peter Jackson.
Yes. It's at a really random point, and then the Two Towers was a really random point too. They were both bad.
So okay. One out of three was good, the other two.
Yeah, one out of three was good. I get annoyed when people need to take a break for a 90-minute movie. I'm like, for fuck's sake. But the like 4 hours would have an intermission. Like if this was at cinema, it would have to have
an intermission.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like other movies, like when Quentin Tarantino put his like the longer cut of that in theaters, like that was 3.5 hours long or whatever, and that had an intermission. So, So I'd expect. I think anything over 3 hours, anything over like that set time probably needs an intermission.
James Cameron.
Well, yeah.
Just so
I really want to get maybe I never really thought about it too much, but the one thing I got really into by the end of this, movie is I was like, man, I really want to know more about, whatever that place is where they're going, like the elf homeland and shit, which.
Yeah. I thought they couldn't go there anymore. Like, no, hey, this is the last boat.
They were banished or whatever. And now they're going back. Right. I think that's right. Karen probably knows one there. Elves.
As in they're never...
Where are they going?
They're going back to the homeland, right?
They're going back to the White Shores. It's death. It's a very...
So they're all going to commit suicide.
It's a metaphor for death because Gandalf was told... No, because Gandalf was told that... his life was only there until Middle-earth was saved. Middle-earth's been saved.
Yeah, but what about the other elves?
Where were they trying to send Arwen this entire time?
Yeah.
They were trying to send her to the White Shores, which is, you know, as Gandalf kind
that
of...
That makes no sense. If she's going to die anyway,
no,
then
because
why not
the,
just
it's,
let her...
It is, a, it is elven culture to be kind of... to rescind yourself to that and to kind of let yourself go freely. It's very different to being stabbed and finding yourself at the White Shores. Like it is transporting yourself there, but it is, yeah, it's a metaphor for death overall. They can never return. It's a one-way trip. It is the last ship to, it's the last ship away with the elves.
That just makes sense. I think we need to wreck on this, you know.
I'm Googling.
Tolkien doesn't.
I don't like this.
No,
like it's this because it's the thing. It's the whole. It goes back
so
to the
whole. So the entire three films, Elrond was trying to send his daughter away to die instead of having a happy life with Aragorn. Is that what you're saying?
It says here Valinor, which is apparently the Great White or whatever. That's the, like, what's actually
because they go to what's called the Undying Lands.
It says that was originally in the realm of Valar and Aman, the place in which they migrated from their former kingdom of Alamaran after the destruction of the Two Lamps by Melkor, whatever the fuck any of that means. It was also known as the Undying Lands. Its elves dwelt there in eternal bliss in addition to Ringbearers. That does not sound like death.
But eternal it is death bliss? Because it's eternal bliss, because a positive death is eternal bliss. It's like heaven. It's like taking you away from your mortal coil.
Yeah, well, they and left passing there. So that means they were dead. They were living there dead. And then when they were exiled, they became alive and came to the land of man. Alive.
Technically. Like, because no. It's like the land of milk and honey where people are.
So what you're saying is Middle Earth is hell.
Yes, Middle Earth is a mortal existence. Middle Earth is pain. Middle Earth is struggling. Middle Earth is a mortal existence away from the bliss of Havana. It could be many things, like the story of Adam and Eve starting in the Garden of Eden, and then once they found their shame and their sin, they were then moved to the mortal planes and mortal worlds.
In the books, it says that. Sam goes there later.
Yes.
In his later age.
Once he's old and his kids have grown up, yeah. Sam goes there as well.
And then it says that after the death of Aragorn, Legolas brings Gimli there.
And that's because they are longer aged creatures. So instead of, I think it's a choice where, especially for elves, because they live for so long, instead of them waiting for their death, they can choose to go there freely and give up their mortal life in Middle Earth.
This is the shit I need something to dig more into. This is why maybe is there an audiobook for the Simulacrum or whatever the fuck it's called?
The Simularian. I believe so. There should definitely be an audiobook for them. Definitely.
Maybe I want to listen to that.
At this point.
Like, this is where digging into Lord of the Rings lore is actually fucking fascinating. And it makes Tolkien such an interesting human being in terms of just how much he knew about his world and how much he planned. Even if it's never really brought up in either of his main two books.
Because that's the thing that is like so interesting. Like, and it's sort of funny because I feel like you could watch the Lord of the Rings and very easily miss a lot of this stuff that the elves like talk about and all this like other sort of back history or stuff. But like the fact that, yeah, like I just find a lot of this like stuff quite interesting. The elves' history and the ring bearers and Gandalf or whatever, all the wizards and whatever else. Like it's all quite interesting history wise. Makes me wonder if the series will dig any more into that. I mean, obviously it's not when they're there, but they could discuss it, I guess. I don't know. Like the elves or something like that. Because I'd be keen. I'd be keen to know more. It also makes you wonder why no one's ever tried to do like a sequel series or some weird shit like that. Like, I guess it's because people have the rights to.
Well, the thing is that Tolkien never wrote anything in the future.
Yeah, I know, but someone could just.
Dude, whoever writes, whoever starts to. I don't know, mess around with Tolkien stuff, even his are they grandchildren or his son?
No, that's what I was gonna say. That's probably why it hasn't happened, because like they have his stuff is all like controlled by his family or whatever.
Yeah. And also like it's the same thing as, you know, the Hobbit movies are a great example of people fucking around with Tolkien stuff and it not being good. And it not fitting in or not doing well. Like there's so much added by the writers, by Peter Jackson, by Mr. Del Toro, who definitely was involved with everything. He wrote it all, really. Let's blame him. But yeah, I think it's there's so much about Lord of the Rings and so much depth to it, and people know it so well that anybody coming in to tell their own tales or to change the stories, like even like something like the up and coming Gollum game is a tale. You know, a tale that is different. You compare it to Shadow of Mordor and those games, and they're so well received and so well done, but they walk a fine line of very interesting takes. Like, it's funny when I know I've played Shadow of Mordor, and then I watch Return of the King when I see Shelob attacking Frodo, and I'm like, nah, you're not a spider, you're a hot elf lady that turns into a spider.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
I didn't play that one.
Yeah, it's in the second one, I think she's
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
So when those games take place, like...
They take place, like, back when the rings were first created.
Okay, right.
Like, in the First Age. Wow. I think it's the it's end like of the First Age coming...
Thousands of years ago.
But yeah, it is... Yeah.
Crazy.
Roughly about the time where we're going to be experiencing... in the TV show.
TV show is the Third Age, I think.
No, because the Third Age is what we're in.
There must be the Second Age, because it's like, I know it's after.
Yeah. Because, yeah, the Third Age is the age that Lord of the Rings takes place in. Yeah, quickly, the First Age is pre... First Age is pre... is pre-Sauron. Second Age is... During Sauron, Third Age is post Sauron and his return.
No, Second Age. It's set during the Second Age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 1,000 years before everything set during the Second Age. So that's still after Sauron and everything, though, I think, right? I think the First Age is.
Well, no, like, this is. I think the First Age ends. No, because this stuff happens like pre Sauron stuff. Like the rings have been forged in.
Yeah, I think there. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I can't remember the exact time.
Stuff is bad, but I thought it was like the First Age ends once like Sauron. Everything happens with Sauron. Like they have the big fight. That's the end of the First Age, and then this is the Second Age. I don't know when the Second Age ends and the Third Age begins, but or anything like that. Because like if you like the Fourth Age would be what starts at the end of Return of the King, right? That would be the Fourth Age,
yeah.
Presumably. The Fourth Age is the age of a.
Because the fourth age, so the third age finishes as Gandalf leaves. When Gandalf, Elrond, Bilbo, and Frodo leave to the
That makes sense. Yeah.
That is the end of the third age.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then I'm like, well, when's the second age finish and the third age finish? No.
Beginning of the Second Age is Return of Noldor.
That guy.
It's the longest of the ages.
It's like this is like a live history class. Where's this age in?
Sauron's defeat is the end of the Second Age.
Oh, okay, so the series is actually going to like sort of set up.
Yeah, so the series is about the creation of the rings and everything, and about how the rings came to be. From what I've seen of the trailers and what I've heard of people talking about, that is what the series is more based upon.
Let me see here. Set in a time of relative peace and covers all the major events of Middle-earth Second Age, the forging of the Rings of Power, the rise of the Dark Lord Sauron, the fall of the Island Kingdom of Numenor, and the last alliance between elves and men. These events take place over thousands of years in Tolkien's original stories, but are condensed for the series.
So this is in the second millennium of the second age, then. Judging by the timeline I've got up here.
When did the first age end and the second age start? What was the event that caused that? Now that we've covered nearly every age, like what is the what's the first and second age? Like is it the forming of the Rings of Power?
No. Is that the forming of the Rings. No. The forming of the Rings of Power happened like midway through the Second Age.
Okay, because you would have thought that was an event-defining.
So the First Age is events in the beginning, at the beginning of time, also known as the Elder Age. Talking about the race of the Arda, which is Gandalf is a descendant of, against the evil that is Morgoth and his eventual overthrow by combined armies of Valar, Eldon, and Edain.
Yes, I remember this. This name Morgoth came up when I was googling something the other night. So that adds up. I can't remember. I was like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, totally. Yeah, but it makes you wonder. Like, this was supposed to be a Return of the King podcast, but it's Lord of the Rings, right? That's what the podcast is all about, Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
It makes like that, but I did do like a bunch of googling after the end of this because I was like, this is so cool, but there's like still so much untapped potential. Because like if you like boil this stuff down, you're like, man, everything there, that sounds like a whole 10
Dude,
seasons.
It's like when you, so did you, either of you play The War of the North, that video game?
No.
So that is all based off Tolkien's writings, as far as I'm aware, of like a separate war that was going on with Mordor in the north of the of Middle Earth. Like what, that
during
is
the same time or
during what? The same time, correct? Yeah, my favorite, and I think this is my favorite thing, and I love people like Tolkien. You know, modern day, I think Matt Mercer for Critical Role.
You just compare Matt Mercer to.
Pardon? No, but I fit them in the same category of people that you could be like, hey, when Frodo is at this point in the world, what's going on over here in the map? And like they would be able to explain it to you. They'd be able to talk through because their overall overarching understanding of the world as a whole is almost omnipresent in the way they talk about it. They could understand, even if, you know, most likely they're just talking bullshit and making up at the spot, they have enough of an understanding and enough of a perception of their worlds to be able to do that in a way. And I appreciate authors of that kind of caliber and such.
I appreciate that we've got 4 hours worth of movie and we're not talking about any of it.
But no, the thing is, I think, like,
I am talking about it. This is part of the movie.
I think Return of the King and the Lord of the Rings, now that we're at the end of the trilogy, and it's kind of, it's probably why we led into eventually The Hobbit getting split into three movies, is because it is such an inspiring story in terms of how rich the world is of Middle Earth. It's a rich haven that you want to dive into and you want to find out more of. Mm. You almost wish like it was a game that you could get DLC for. Like there was more story to come. People just want to dive into it and learn more about it. And there's all these kind of minor histories that are like half mentioned throughout Lord of the Rings that never really explained or dove into. They're just mentioned. And you always get the sense that they're not just mentioned just by name. Like there is an actual story to tell there and information. Like I think, you know, I always find just learning about Gandalf is fascinating. Learning about Gandalf and his history and the other wizards and his relationship with Galadriel. I think so much of that is really, really interesting, but Lord of the Rings doesn't feel the need to shove that down your throat or to explore it right there and then, like another lot of modern day properties would feel like they need to do. It lets you ask those questions and wonder about them and think about them yourself.
Yeah, I think the reason I've had all this stuff on my mind is because I honestly feel like, I don't know, again, I don't know if it's just this recent rewatch, I don't know if it's the watching the extended cuts or something like that. I feel like I'm more interested in the Lord of the Rings franchise coming off this rewatch than I like sort of have been ever before. So that's why like coming to the end of the movie, I was so sort of engulfed in the world by like coming to the end of this and knowing there was a, because there's not another movie, you know, like the other two movies we watch, I get to them, I'm like, cool, can't wait to watch the next one. Whereas I reached the end of this one and now I'm just like, man, I really enjoyed that so much. And now I'm just at the, let me just dive into all the lore Google searches and stuff because I've got nothing else. Like, that's the, it's a positive. It's a positive for the franchise. And the,
I'd actually recommend, even though, you know, we're a bit of a lull for games, I'd even recommend playing through Shadow of Mordor, like as a, even on easy or like maybe just skipping through and watching a YouTube video of all the cutscenes and stuff, because the depth and interest of characters you get in that and the,
I think I got to the end and never finished it.
Of the first one.
You should do both. You should.
Yeah,
you should,
I think honestly, I got to the last boss fight, and then I was like, "Nah, I better go clean up all the trophies and side quests before I do the last boss
because
fight."
Because the second one, the second one delves a lot deeper into, I can't remember his name now, but the ghost elf. It delves into his kind of position and his lore, which I think is very interesting and builds a lot about a very an earlier version of Middle Earth that was filled with so much more magic than the magic that we currently have in Lord of the Rings.
Hmm. I'll tell you what else I really like. If I had to pick one scene from this movie that I was really glad was like coming up for something I was talking about last week, I'm really glad to have that the Saruman scene. I don't know why the fuck that was cut. Like, I don't understand.
Dude,
why
it's
that
so fucking good, isn't it? Yeah. It's messed up, but it's so good.
I just can't imagine. Like, I went and looked up what the original scene, how it played out was, and I was like, why was this changed?
He isn't even in that movie.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, but they're literally just like, people in there hear some screams or whatever. You just assume he's dead. I don't know. Like,
dude, fucking, like, it's not even like he throws himself off the tower. Yeah. He gets him fucking paled and then ripped underneath the water wheel itself. Like, it is Ooh, it's gnarly. Gruesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's way good. I'm like, why wasn't this in the fucking... So
it's a shame that we didn't see the water wheel do a full rotation, you know?
No, you know, and I'm good with that bit. But
it is really annoying, though, because, like, he's the main antagonist. Even though you have... For us, yeah. Like, obviously, there's...
Well, he's the only... He's the main physical antagonist when you think about...
Like, Sauron's in the background, but, like, this guy is the antagonist that you see and hear from primarily, that you can understand as an audience member and everything else for two movies. And to not see his demise or see him get his, like, comeuppance...
It's got to be a ratings thing, right? Just like, it has to be a ratings thing because of his death.
I don't know. Like, it is probably... It is very brutal. It's probably the most brutal thing in the movie, but, like... It's worth it.
I think you could have cut it like before the water wheel, though.
Yeah, just having land,
just having cut, fall.
Cut the shot of Gandalf being like, just nodding. Yeah, shrug,
and then Pippin picking up this thing.
Peregrine took.
How would that have made sense now? It just happened to be in the water. I guess was it in the original cut?
I don't know.
It just happened to be in the water. No, yeah. It was just a thing where it was presumed that it's either. Fallen from the tower in the combat or it's just something to happen. Because you don't go anywhere near the tower. Nobody's ever really converses with the fact that Saruman died or anything. It's just, it is there. And people just kind of presume that it just got there.
That's dumb. See, this movie's ruined the theatrical cuts for me, I feel.
It does. You'll never watch the theatrical cuts again. The extended cuts are now your only version of Lord of the Rings.
I think so. Even though it's 4 hours. I don't feel like I could be like, man, it's really worth, if I really want to watch it, it's like, well, it's 3 hours and 3.5 hours or whatever, or 3 hours, 15, whatever. Like, is it worth not watching the better version just for an extra hour? I'm going to say no. It's not.
No. Even for me, I honestly think Lord of the Rings is the coolest trilogy of just, like, I do it, I've done it regularly with my friends for the last couple of years, where we regularly have like 3 weeks where we'll watch one movie every weekend. And we'll just hang out and chill out and talk shit. And I'll have somebody to tell about Viggo Mortensen breaking his toe when he kicked that helmet in the scene in Two Towers and how they kept the cut because he actually hurt himself. And that scream of pain was actually him hurting himself. But yeah, it's really nice to converse with people over it. And I think there's so much to love about Lord of the Rings and the world of Middle-earth.
Everyone's like, we know. You've told us before. For fuck's sake. Another scene I really liked that wasn't in the original. Aragorn cutting off the head of the mouth of Sauron. I really like that. The dude who comes out from the gate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's like, Frodo's dead. You all suck. And everyone believes him. Everyone's crying. Aragorn chops his head off and goes, this dude's full of shit. Let's get back. I was like, yeah. I thought it was badass. I liked it. Just fucking straight. He like waltzes up to him. This dude's like, what are you going to do? Use your
my head.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great. I was like, that should have been in the original cut.
Aragorn continues to be a total badass in this movie.
He does.
We haven't even talked about, freaking Boromir's dad. I can never remember his actual name.
Yeah, him dying. See, that was another addition with it. That massive scene where, like, even the addition of like that 15 seconds of him crying, like over his dad dying or whatever, like that adds a lot to those characters in the movie in the whole. So it's just a lot of little things that were in the original.
Denethor, yeah, it just adds a lot more.
Yeah.
Denethor, that's it. Thank you.
There you go.
And just his madness is really interesting and well acted throughout all of it. You kind of get a lot more breathing room for that. I always find it really funny.
Come on.
Did you guys pay it? Well, he's got some kind of madness or sickness. Like, he's not in his right head. But did you guys, I don't know if you know, for some reason, I didn't really realize this. Did you notice where they go? Like, in this, the extended cut, they have a shot of them carrying the body and where they carry the body to the mausoleum.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed, but the logistics of where he ran while he was on fire is fucking amazing. Like, the mausoleum
He ran across an entire bridge, then he ran, like, about 10 kilometers down a very massive area.
Yeah. If you think about it, it's like, dude ran so fucking far to drop off the edge of that. Like, he was a man on a mission. He's like, if I'm dying, I'm hurling myself off this thing.
I reckon John Noble just
slowly burn to death. I want the biggest impact as possible.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're talking about really wide just shot?
Like, you know, he's a fast dude.
Cut a fast to a wide shot of this wall, and I want me burning off the edge of it, falling down to be in the sea. It's like, okay, we'll do that.
Talk about him, excellent, though. That character, I also think, like, him and his relationship with Boromir is greatly improved by having that scene in Two Towers.
Like, Faramir?
Yeah. I feel like that improves that movie and this movie a lot.
100%. I also don't think the scene where Denethor sees the ghost of, or like the illusion or the vision of Boromir.
Yeah. That doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good. And I think that's part of the reason
why. You couldn't
why
have just got shown me.
I think it was in an additional, that's an additional scene for this cut. I don't think that's in the original. So maybe that's why it isn't as polished.
Yeah.
But I actually really like that.
But then he gets title credit at the end.
Dude. But don't they just do title credit for like this? Like they just treat it as a Lord of the Rings credit? Like,
well, because it's, I think they have to treat it as a credit because he was technically there for the filming of this.
Yeah.
Because they did all three at the same time.
Yeah. So, yeah, good job, John Lee.
Which is insane. Could you think of movies doing that nowadays? Like just pumping out three movies all at once? I don't even think they're really
Aren't they shooting like Avatar 1 and 2 or whatever at the same time?
Apparently 3's in the can already.
Okay, yeah.
Like, they've shot the actual acting.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's still CGI. There's still a lot of CGI.
Because that's what, I knew they were shooting either 2 or 3 Avatars in a row, so. That's
You know, the acting of 2 and 3 is technically one movie. It's just, when you add in all the effects and the motion capture stuff, then it's two movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine another project like doing it, like, especially without like extended breaks in between like the process, you know what I mean?
No, yeah.
Crazy. I remember having a discussion as a kid because these movies came out at similar times to the Harry Potter movies and discussing which spider was better, Aragog or Shelob. And I used to get them confused all the time. Because I was a small kid who was like,
I don't know. Shelob got taken out pretty quick, so.
True.
Aragog's still alive, right?
True.
Nah, well, Aragog lived a couple years, but he died eventually. And then his kids eat him.
Had a family. See, that's the difference. Family. His legacy will live on. Shelob just, you know.
I also appreciate Sam listening to those orcs being like, hey, you're still alive. And Sam's just like, ah, oh, fuck. Fuck.
Fuck. Yeah, I've got to go save him again. I just finished saving him. Go save him again. At least he had the thought of mind to take the ring while he had a chance.
Also, Gollum / Smeagol, you're a champ. You survive everything except for lava. Lava's the end doing. But
that was the only thing.
Lava's like, could kill the One Ring and this indestructible little goblin golem creature because.
How do you feel about the opening of this film? Like, flashback to Smeagol.
I remember when I first, it was intense the first time I watched it. Like, also,
he straight up strangles a dude.
I also forget every time. And I also find some, I also generally am eating something at the start of this movie. And
I was also eating there at the start of this movie.
Something about his transitions, thing? Like biting his, like, biting into the fish and stuff. I'm like, oh, I don't feel hungry anymore.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I think it's, he like blinks at one point and then his eyes.
Yeah, it's that long shot of him slowly blinking. I'm like, this is insanely good, but at the same time, I feel so uncomfortable.
I really like it because it comes, like, it's like links into what we were talking about last week of Two Towers, where Frodo feels sorry for him because he has a fear of becoming him and all this sort of stuff. And it shows you that at the start there, he is just this normal hobbit just out fishing or whatever, and the ring corrupted both of them within seconds, I guess.
Although, like, the thing is, that's his natural voice.
Yeah. Also true. Smeagol's voice is his natural voice. The Gollum voice is the bad one.
Yeah. Yeah, that one.
Give it to me. Give it to me. Pull it in. Pull it in.
No, I liked it. I feel it was good. Although it's weird to see Andy Serkis a bit younger. And not with a fake South African accent.
And doesn't have a massive beard.
Yeah, doesn't have a massive beard. Also, shout out to Brett McKenzie in this, which I always like pointing out.
Where is he?
He's one of the elves, and once you spot him, I never noticed him the first time.
He's the elf. You see him more in Fellowship, right? You see him more in Fellowship.
Pretty sure you see him more in The Hobbit.
The Hobbit also, yes. Yes.
Do you?
Because in The Hobbit, he's the elf he's that's Elrond's like buddy. Pissed. He's Ooh. Elrond's right-hand man that's pissed about all the shit the dwarves are doing. And he's like, we can't keep them here any longer. They're going to keep eating all of our food.
I think he's the one who's like, my lady, where are you going? Or like whatever, Elrond or whatever. Mobility, what are we doing? Whatever, that one. That's him, I believe. Yeah. Anything you want to shout out? Particular favorite scene or moment or character beats where you haven't hit on, Ash?
Gollum manipulating Frodo and like him getting that moment of his secret plan of him, he's going to ask for the ring and then, you know, he's totally sending up Sam beating the shit out of him.
Dude, Sam destroys Gollum. Like, just absolutely.
Yeah, his head must be made of, like, something.
He also just apparently survived falling.
Sam's just not very weak.
Very far distance, so.
It's true. I mean, even the final moment of, like, them in the volcano when Gollum's, like, comes flying in.
Dude, sees Gollum the footsteps, bites his finger off, man.
Bites his finger off. It's kind of, when you think about it, it's not like like he just falls, right? No. Frodo does push him.
Yeah, Frodo throws him.
I mean, yeah. Frodo, yeah, I was going to say Frodo.
I thought it was like, it's a kind of a passive ending. But, because he doesn't really choose.
No, because.
He doesn't choose to destroy the ring. He kind of chooses to kill Gollum, right?
And that's the thing. Frodo never actually chooses it. It's Gollum's greed and Gollum's desire for the ring that is the downfall of the ring. The fact that Gollum is happy and peaceful in his final moment because he finally has the ring as he falls into the lava with it.
Together forever.
Yeah, it's...
Will death do us part?
Yep.
Married to the ring.
Yep.
Anything else?
I really like Pippin and his relationship with
Faramir.
Who's Faramir? A lot better in this
That's
movie.
Really cool. Yeah, really nice talking, you know. That's really cool. I love Eowyn and the other one, Merry. They're cool together. In Eowyn, you know, taking out the Witch King.
She finally redeems herself.
You know, but then she falls in love real quick, doesn't she? She's like, I got over Aragorn real fast. I don't even know when that takes place. It's like five. That's probably the most disjointed thing in this movie.
Over that 5-year period, I don't know.
It was like 5 minutes, right? Like, hey, we both got injured. Let's fall in love.
Yeah, I don't know. That's how love works, I think, maybe.
I guess. I'm sure there was tons of stories like that in the war, like when... I know, like two people in the recovery would just meet up and they go, okay, we almost died. Let's fall in love, have children.
No better reason, I guess. I don't know.
And then Legolas taking out the Oliphant. That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. All that Legolas stuff in these movies, like the few moments he gets to be super gymnastic and cool, but they still look and just seem a lot less sillier than any of the ones in The Hobbit.
Yep. Dude, I remember being so hyped as a kid about Legolas taking down the elephant. That shit was cool as fuck. Now you look at it and go, this is kind of bad. This is kind of bad CGI, but it's fine.
Bless me. When he slides down that trunk and just comes off, I was like, and then the fact that Gimli has a thing about it, still only counting as one.
Still only counts as one.
Yeah.
There's always something that makes me smile so much about Gimli's line of just like, you know, death beyond recognition, certain death. Well, what are we waiting for? I'm always like, yeah, buddy.
No, I love the heartfelt line of where he's like, never thought I'd die next to an elf, and then like it's just like, how about next to a friend? And then he's like, that I can do, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the best bromance ever.
That's good.
It is. Well, which is the bad bromance? Frodo and Sam or Legolas and Gimli?
Legolas and Gimli.
Yeah, Legolas and Gimli.
There's something I fucking like this.
I guess when you think about it, the Frodo-Sam relationship is a little bit abusive.
It's like a lot. Frodo-Sam, it's just an intense, like they have an intense journey. Gimli and Legolas, watching them is like a lot more enjoyable. So I'm going to say.
Gimli and Legolas are like friends, they're pals, they're equals. Whereas Sam puts Frodo on a pedestal. Sam is just, and like, as I said last week, there's just something a little off-putting about the Mr. Frodo, I'm your Sam. It's just like,
And they have that long lingering look, you know?
Yeah. You think there's a chance? Yeah, they sleep that bit closer together.
Do you think, you know, he knew it was coming? He knew what the fans wanted.
I like it. This is the thing, in the original cut, I remember like all the original versions of these movies when Sam gets to the end and he's like, man, I'd love that woman or whatever her name is. She'd be the one I would marry. And I was like, who the fuck is that? At least in this version, I was like, oh yeah, the girl, like they had that additional scene where he's like sort of fawning over her as they're walking out of the bar. And like, I was like, all right.
At least Frodo forces her to dance with her. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, at least I have a little bit more context now, like compared to who the fuck are you talking about, Sam? Like, I thought you were hot for Frodo. Like, what's a. You know? So,
Frodo sets it up so we can get away from Sam. He doesn't have the heart to tell if he doesn't feel the same way.
Yeah, well. We'll be there. Kieran, got any moments you want to shout out?
I think the moment of Aragorn leading the army towards the Gates of Mordor, I always find that just imagery is stunning. And I think there's a lot of beautiful imagery in this. I feel like the passing shot of the Tree of Gondor having a single bud on it, symbolizing hope and freedom is really pretty and really beautiful. Classic Gandalf just shitting on fucking Pippin at any possible moments.
Can I also say them opening the Black Gate and like seeing Mount, like obviously the tower, and then Mount Doom like erupting almost. Mm-hmm. That was a cool shot.
It's there's a lot to this movie. And yeah, just overall think it's fantastic. You know, it's a life lesson of be more specific in your contracts, people. Be like, hey, undead army, you're actually contracted until we defeat Sauron. Cause let's be honest, right? The undead army in Aragorn is the perfect, like, it's like game design, right? Where like the game gives you a super overpowered, cool thing that you get to use for one level to feel like a badass. But when you're going towards the final boss, it has a reason to take it off you because it would make the final boss too easy.
Very specific.
Because if it is, but it always makes me laugh. And also the shot.
So Gimli, like, hey, we should keep these guys around.
Yeah, we should get them to go to Mordor quickly, right? Like. Just zip in and out. Like, they'll be fine. Like, the shot of the wide shot of the undead army as, like, this wave of ghosts, like, fighting through, Minas Tirith, and just being, like, almost on top of each other is just so cool. And there's just so many moments of just little things. I could gush over little things. I could gush over how cool the design of the Army of Mordor's battering ram is, this like warthog-like creature with fire brewing out of it to breathe fire in on once it hits and weakens the doors. Like, just little things like that I just absolutely adore and love. Elrond coming to give Aragorn the sword and that conversation. There's just so much. Lord of the Rings is such a special thing, and it makes me go, man, you know, it almost makes seeing through The Hobbit worth it, because you know you're just getting to the Lord of the Rings. Like,
it makes that high higher, right?
It does. Especially when originally I suggested we should watch them in release order, and we should do the Lord of the Rings first and then The Hobbit. God, I'd been so sad. I would have been so sad for three movies.
No, I don't want to do this TV show.
Exactly. Like, I hope the TV show sticks to this, and meets this kind of caliber of world building and depth of lore and doesn't succumb to too many modern tropes or modern writing archetypes that we have nowadays in film and TV. I want it to take its time. I want it to enjoy itself. I want it to not feel like it needs to turn over every possible rock. Like, leave some mystery, leave some unknowns in this world, because
I got a lot of hope for that TV show, which is the reason I wanted to do this podcast originally. But I got a lot of hope because, and a lot of faith, solely based on the fact that there's no way I just refuse to believe Amazon fucks this up, because if they do, it's like such a miss. Like, they want this to be massive for them. They want this to be a multi-year massive hit show for their streaming service. Mm. So I'm like, this is the one they have to get right. So, if of anything.
What about you, John? Any other moments?
I was just going to say, there is something, after you sit with these characters for, in these extended cuts, nearly 10 hours, over 10 hours, I don't know. After you sit with them this long, that moment when the ring finally, that's watching the fight. And look, I've seen the movie before. Obviously, I know what's going to happen, but it's still, tense in the way it's, I love the editing, the way it,
cuts. It takes so long to burn out, right?
Yeah, I know, but, just that whole thing, just the fight, the fact that, seeing them all surrounded, Aragorn and the last remaining fighters, seeing them surrounded, that, sort of what Ash was saying before, the fact that you can see the eye and the mountain and everything in the background, and they're literally in view of one another while these events are happening, sort of for the first time, where every other time these characters have been fighting, they're nowhere near in view of one another. And obviously they can't see each other, but in view of their locations for the first time. I really love how that sort of plays out, and you can see that happening. But yeah, when that ring finally just breaks and just shit starts going crazy, and the tower starts falling, and everything, it's such a release, for the characters, and I don't know, there's really, I can't think of many other cinematic moments where you've sat with these characters for so long to finally see them achieve their goal. It's really is such a euphoric, I think perfectly edited, paced moment. So yeah, that's sort of my, I think, probably my favorite bit.
How do we feel about them all laughing when Frodo was?
I don't mind. I know it's a meme. But unless I knew it was a meme, I personally didn't find it funny or weird. Like, when I watched it as a kid, I don't think I would find it funny. I don't find it funny or weird now. I'm aware that people think it's hilarious and they've turned it into a meme or whatever, but I've never had any issues with it. I think it's fine. So, it's just joy. Frodo's happy you're alive. He's happy to see his friends. Everyone's just chilling. Everyone's just laughing, having a good time. I don't care.
Merry and Pippin are smoking all the weed in there.
Yeah, they're high as fuck.
Look, we can all know that no matter what, yes, Frodo destroyed the ring, but the biggest impact the hobbits had on the society of men is introducing them to the marvels of Second Breakfast.
And thirdsies. And forests.
And elevensies.
Elevensies, yeah. Yeah, anything else before we wrap up for the films?
One last thing. I do love that, when they're captured Frodo, all the orcs and Uruk-hai start turning on each other. Over.
Yeah, they literally kill all of them. Or each other. Sam waltzes in. It looks like a war just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. All right. Well, that'll do it for our last movie watch along discussion thing. Of course, you can join us next week when we will be talking about the premiere episode of, I assume it's just one. I don't actually know if they're dropping more than one at this stage of recording. Fine. Anyway, we'll be talking about how many episodes are at the premiere of, because of course, previously Amazon does do 3 episodes sometimes. I don't know. We'll be talking about however many episodes dropped at release for The Rings of Power, Amazon's Lord of the Rings series. And then join us each week after that to discuss each and every episode. And if everything goes well in the years coming, I guess, as the show returns for multiple seasons, as I will hope, and I'm presuming the bigwigs at Amazon are also hoping so. There we go. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you here next week to talk about the Amazon TV series. Ash, what do you got to say to propose at the show?
I mean, Frodo could have had, bought his own book. You know what I mean? He didn't have to tack it on the back of Bilbo's.
You never heard of a double album?